Okay, now we're set. Well, this is great. I'm really happy to be able to speak with you both.
So are we.
Yeah, we're excited to talk with you.
Great, good. So we're scheduled to go for about 45 minutes. And when we're done with the recording, I go in and edit the audio, and then I upload it. I've got like four different platforms, from Apple Podcasts to Spotify and TuneIn and all those. So anyway, when I'm all done with those, I will send the links to each of those platforms to Johanna, and from that point on, you can do with them as you would like.
Great.
Awesome.
Great. Okay. So now whenever I have two guests at the same time, I always try to do equal opportunity. So we'll go ahead and you know, make sure we get both of your opinions on each of the questions, okay?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. So any questions on your part?
I don't think so.
Okay, great. And I did notice on your website that you do, for pre-orders before the 18th of August, that you do have that extra bonus for people, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We actually will send them immediately. We'll send them the digital copy of the book so they can get started right away if they're excited to read the book. And then we'll also send them the audio book too as well, that the pre-sale audio book that Kira and I recorded personally.
Great, great. Okay, so I was just going to make sure that that was still in effect so I can mention it and promote it toward the end of the show.
Perfect.
Great.
Great. Now, any questions on your part?
Yeah, Robert, what's your background? We didn't get a lot of information on your background, your show. So,
okay.
Just wanted a very brief, just sure. Try to understand who you are. So I would love to.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now the show is Bringing Inspiration to Earth, and I have been doing it now for 14 years. and I've got about 1,800 podcasts in my archives. And now my work background is, I have a bachelor's in psychology from Whittier College. I've got experience in corporate America in the banking and the restaurant industries. But for most of my adult life, I've really done the entrepreneurial kind of path.
Nice. I like
that. Wonderful.
Kira has a degree in psychology, too.
Yes, I have a bachelor's in psych.
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't notice that when I was reading your bio. So, so, you know, it's one of those degrees that you use every day, no matter what you do.
Absolutely.
Yeah, great. Okay, so are we all ready?
Yes.
Okay, great.
All right, let me go ahead and get started.
Good day, everyone. Welcome to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,600 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.biteradio.me. Today, my special guests are Brad Newberry and Kira Newberry, co-authors of the book The Saved Effect, True Stories of Lives Reclaimed by People Who Were Willing to Act. The Saved Effect shows that saving a life isn't just about restoring a heartbeat. It's about preserving the years, memories, and generations that follow. What happens after a life is saved? In The Saved Effect, veteran firefighter and paramedic Brad Newberry and co-author Kira Newberry take readers beyond the sirens, the CPR, and the split-second decisions to reveal what truly matters, the years, memories, and relationships that exist because someone stepped forward when it mattered most. Brad Newberry is president and CEO of the National Medical Education and Training Center, and with more than 40 years of experience in firefighting and pre-hospital medicine, Brad has dedicated his life to one mission, helping others be ready and willing to act when it matters most. Kira Newberry is an emergency medical professional and emerging author. With a background in psychology and a passion for storytelling, Kira combines her clinical training with a deep empathy for the human side of emergency medicine, sharing real stories that reveal how readiness saves lives. For more information, you can visit their website, which is thesavedeffect.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Brad and Kira to the show. Good day.
Hello, how are you?
Good day. Thank you very much for having us.
I am wonderful, and I am so anxious to talk to you folks because this is one of those perspectives that I don't think people think about very often, and yet it has such a profound effect on the lives of the people you interact with. So let's start with Brad. Brad, why did you feel it was important to write this book?
So I've been teaching at the end of every paramedic program we have at graduation. I've been telling a story, and it really revolves around the talk. The name of the talk is called "What Does It Mean to Save a Life?" And I go through this story of one of these stories that's actually in our book about this gentleman, Frank Nagel, and I was involved in Frank's resuscitation in 1994, and then Frank lived another 25 years post-resuscitation. It's a wonderful story of, one, you know, not only his resuscitation, but more so is what came after. And really, I started because I actually, because of some interesting circumstances and chance, I stayed connected with Frank and his family for all of those 25 years, which is not normal. That is definitely not normal for first responders. Normally what we would do is, you know, we'd go to a call, we'd have a patient, regardless of whatever the outcome, especially if it's a positive outcome, we'd drop them off at the hospital, and maybe we might see them a couple of months later. Maybe there's a good save program that the department would have where, you know, we've had an individual that would come back and we'd get to see them a few months later. But what we don't get to see is the true arc of time post their resuscitation, meaning after they lived. And there's a couple of different stories in the book of individuals who lived these long arcs of time after they were resuscitated. And we never know where the ripples of that life saved are going to go, how they continue to touch the lives of not only their family, their community, what they did with the rest of their life. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about in the book is, you know, with Frank and some other stories in there, Frank got to, you know, he got to be present for all of the birthdays, all the anniversaries. He got to help raise his grandchildren. He got to do all these amazing things after he lived. And there's a couple of other stories in the book, particularly this one of John Perino. And John was in cardiac arrest on the dance floor at a Polish club in Abington, Massachusetts. And really the premise of the story starts because John initially, as he went down on the dance floor, two bystanders stepped out of the crowd and began CPR. And because they did, that bought us time. You know, I recently was given an interview, we were talking about the 6 minutes. 6 minutes is a time frame where death begins, biological death happens and brain anoxia begins to happen as well. And from a perspective of a response time, if somebody was to go down and be in cardiac arrest, meaning no, they're not breathing, they don't have a heartbeat, then if no one's doing anything, then that time is ticking away. But if someone were to know CPR or just have this willingness to act and maybe dial 911, maybe the dispatcher gives them information over the phone, they could bridge the gap between that time when the person stops breathing and the time that first responders show up. So that's really where the idea of the book came from.
Okay. And Kira, how about you? Why was it important for you to be a part of the book?
So I have grown up in the emergency medical world since I was a very young child. And since then, I always knew that I wanted to go into this field. But the main thing I really wanted to do was to save lives. And I wanted to be a part of that. So I went to EMT school. I began working in the emergency room. And Prior to that, when I was 8 years old, I had gone to my parents. I said, I want to be an EMT. And they said, well, an eight-year-old, at 8 years old, you're not going to be able to go and take that exam, and Massachusetts won't allow that. And I didn't really believe them. So I had gone to both of them, and I said, well, I found that there's no minimum age requirement to become certified in CPR. And I had gotten my CPR certification, and then I had gone on to work in the become an EMT and start working in the emergency room, do CPR for the first time on a real human, which I actually recount in the book. But my dad had come to me, and I had been going through a really tough time in my life. I had been suffering a lot of grief in my college years, and so I began writing for myself, and I started taking classes in it, and my parents had been coming in to sit and hear my oral presentations, and my dad had come to me and said, I have this book idea, and I really want you to be a part of it. But having that background in emergency medicine since I was a young kid and wanting to go into that to save lives, I knew that after college, that's something that I really wanted to do. And I didn't really think that writing this book, I thought that writing this book would kind of inhibit that. And so I had turned them down multiple times. I said, no, that's not my path. I don't think that I'm going to do that. And then he just kept asking, and he finally said, please, Kira, just sit with this and think about it. And so I had gone back to my dorm room, and I had really sat with the fact that this book could save lives, that my writing that had been helping me so much could help others, that I didn't need to be in a clinical setting to do this, to save people. And so I had gone back to him and I said, okay, I'll join, but listen, it's not going to be everything you say goes. And so when I had seen the look of relief on his face when I had said that, and I knew that this book is, I know that this book is going to save lives, and I didn't directly need to be in a clinical setting to do that. So I wanted to be a part of the journey, and it's been amazing, and I get to do it with my dad, which is something that most people don't get to say, and it's been great so far.
Yeah, good. Yeah, you know, and it's really sometimes a little bit fearful in a way to step out and do something that, you know, you really don't see as part of your path, but then again, it can have such a major impact.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, speaking with about CPR, since you were just mentioning it, Kira, I'll ask you this first. Can you let us know, you know, why the bystander type of CPR kind of is important? And I do notice that on your website, one of the bonuses that people can get from pre-ordering the book is information about hands-only CPR. So if you could just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I like I said before, I'd gone to both my parents when I was 8 years old, and I really wanted to do this, and I had gone in, demonstrated my skills to my dad, and I looked over, and he had been taking photos and videos of me, and in my eight-year-old mind, I kind of said, oh, you know, that's just my dad. He had taken pictures of me on the soccer field, and he was always taking pictures of me being proud, and but come to find out a few years later, I was actually doing that for insurance purposes, in the sense that nobody would believe that an eight-year-old whose dad issued them a CPR card truly actually was able to do it. And so,
and I think before you go on, Robert, you have to understand that we opened our EMS school, and I've been teaching EMS for, you know, paramedic programs, EMT programs, for nearly Kira's entire life. Mm-hmm. So by the time she was eight, she was always here at our school. She was hanging around with our students. She was attending classes. I have some amazing pictures of her, you know, at 8 and 9, 10 years old, and even a little bit older, of her, you know, participating in our practical labs with our students, both as a patient, and then when she, you know, she would come after school, and also during the summer, she was here every day. So she'd be in there learning from our instructors, learning from our students, practicing with our mannequins. So this was really just a part of her upbringing and who she was, and bringing her into that kind of life of service.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
Go ahead.
To answer your question about why bystander CPR is so important, I think, like I had mentioned, in college I had suffered through a lot of grief and a lot of sudden deaths. But one of the stories within the book is of my grandfather, who we got 6 more months with after he had cardiac arrested in public, and 2 bystanders had saved his life. And I think that one of the things that had really driven me to do this project was the fact that I got 6 more months, and it was exponentially more impactful than those sudden deaths have been, and it was a lot, it gave me a lot of closure too. And I wanted to also bring that. I wanted to be able to give more people those 6, 7, 8, 3 years left for everybody else. So that was a major factor in driving me to do this project. I know my dad's story is very different.
Yeah. Go ahead, Brad. How about you with the CPR? The bystander. Now, you did mention the John Perino, and that, and Frank, and also you mentioned the 6 minutes, the critical time period. So it seems that because of that time period, really bystanders are at an ideal place and time to be able to react, and make that, to make the outcome more positive.
Yeah, and I think that, I've been frustrated as a paramedic showing up on scene, and where people, able-bodied people, are standing around doing nothing. And I say frustrating because we know that we're up against that time, and sometimes more than 6 minutes had passed, and I've watched people pass away, and I'm not saying that they would have helped, they would have saved them, because there's so many factors that play into that, but mm-hmm. but there have been times when we show up and people are performing CPR, and we've had some really positive outcomes for those patients. And so I've seen the difference between when CPR is being performed, when we show up in our fire and EMS, and when it's not. And I can tell you right now that there are drastic differences, both not only in the initial outcome, but in the long-term outcome too. And it can mean the difference between whether someone has had a brain injury and survives, or someone who comes back fully neurologically intact. And to me, that's important. It's important because you give more time back to people that mm-hmm. they never would have had. And then how did they fill that time? And in our book, we have story after story in our book. There's 12 chapters in there, and really talk about some of these individuals who got some incredible amounts of time, right? I mean, 25 plus more years. And some who are still alive and still making impact and still we don't know what the arc of time of those individuals will be, including a young girl in the book who was 8 years old. So here's what we don't know is who will they touch in their lives? How will that affect those individuals? And I think that's important.
Yeah. Now, regarding, bystanders, first of all, I think there are a lot of people who, when emergencies such as that happen, they just freeze up. It's just, they don't know what to do. They're not sure if they should do something, and also if they're even educated in the practice of CPR. So this is going to be a dual question. Number one, why do you think that most or many people freeze, during emergencies? And then with those who don't and actually do administer CPR, are there any legal ramifications from that act?
Yeah, so I think that there's a multitude of reasons why people don't step in. And one of the main things is, I'm sure you know with your background in psychology, is the bystander effect. As humans, our brains are literally wired to not do anything when more people are around. And in that sense, a lot of people are looking to others because they don't feel qualified enough. Somebody else will be able to do it better than they could. Or somebody else knows what to do and they feel as though they don't. And the only way to bypass those, the bystander effect, is through education, training, and experiences. And to people who aren't in this field, you can't just go out and get experiences like people in EMS can. The only way to provide experiences to these people are through our own experiences and through other people's experiences. So by reading this book, you are more likely to bypass the bystander effect. And in that moment, you can tell yourself, I know about this. I know what's happening in my mind right now, and I need to get through it. I need to step up and be the one. But besides that, there's other reasons too, whether they think that they're going to hurt them. You know, we like to say now that you can't hurt somebody who's dead. And which is so true. If somebody is in cardiac arrest and their heart is stopped, there is nothing that you can do that will hurt them more than how they're already hurt now. And CPR is so physical, and it can be very violent at times. You break ribs, you can break the sternum, and I speak about that in the book. In my experience, I had been trained for 12 years at that point, yet when I actually came to it, it was so different than what I had expected, despite all of the knowledge I had about it. And so I think that people are scared to find out something that they weren't expecting to. I'll send that to my dad to answer the second part of your question.
All right. As far as legal point, I think Kira really unpacked the bystander effect and the psychology of those individuals. And I think that when you think about, should I be the one that moves forward, and one fear that people do have, like you said, is like, well, am I going to get sued?
Mm-hmm.
Every state in the country has some form of Good Samaritan law, which allows you as an individual to, when you see an emergency, is to help without fear of ramification of being sued. And so if you have someone who went down and they don't have a pulse and they're not breathing and you began compressions on them, and let's say they didn't want to live, but they lived, they can't come back and sue you because you performed. Because you, at the time, you thought, with the best knowledge you had, you thought they would want you to do that. So there are Good Samaritan laws that would allow you to act, whether it be a car accident or doing CPR. So as long as you function to the level of your training, meaning like if you have no training, then there's no standard. If you were a doctor or you were a paramedic or an EMT, you have to function within your scope of practice. But as a bystander, there's none of that. You can function to whatever level of training that you may have. As long as you're just trying to help someone, there's no legal ramifications around that.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. And, you know, I've heard of the Good Samaritan laws, but didn't realize that, you know, that they exist in, you know, every state, you know, within the U.S. So that's really good. That would help people maybe take away some of the reluctance to become involved. Now, Brad, you mentioned that, you know, you did this, you know, extensive education program, which Kira attended. So what do you, you know, it seems like that there should be a way to have more access or greater access to CPR education. So what's your view of the current availability, and maybe what are some things or suggestions that people can maybe put into play that would increase the scope of education?
Well, first and foremost, I really do think that access to CPR education is ubiquitous. It's everywhere, right? And there are a number of organizations out there, the American Heart Association, American Red Cross, ASHI. So there's a number of organizations that have programs that are teaching CPR both to the layperson and the professional rescuer. So there is really a difference between getting trained and being certified. And CPR, and you know, we have a QR code in our book. You can scan the QR code, and it takes you to a hands-only CPR education piece. It's a video that Kira and I created to teach lay people just how quickly they can do learn compressions and how much that could change and save a life. But there are organized programs because CPR is more than just compressions. There's also airway management. So like if you have somebody who's choking, learning how to do the Heimlich maneuver, whether it be on an infant or child or an adult. So CPR is in a CPR class would be all encompassing from the airway management piece of the person who was choking to doing compressions when someone's heart has stopped. So I think the access is available, and it just really comes down to finding that class. Where do you find that class? And a quick Google search, I'm sure in your area, even if you limited it to your, you know, 25 miles, I bet you could find that class. And if not, you know, we will have some resources eventually in our website here in the near future where people will be able to click links and go out and find a class somewhere close to them.
Okay, that's great. And I'm sure, you know, that there are those resources around. You know, it's just a matter of making the effort to find them and to participate.
And one of the things that we, you know, we are championing the cause, and Kira, why don't you talk about, you know, how different states have graduation requirements, but other states do not. I think that's important, Robert.
Okay. Yeah, I think that that's just it, is the fact that Massachusetts, where we are today, is one of seven states that do not require CPR education and training as a graduation requirement to graduate high school, which to me and to many others is baffling in the fact that we're one of the leading states in education and healthcare, yet when it comes to bringing those two together, we lack that. And one of the stories in the book, her name is Madeline, and my dad had mentioned her before. She was 8 years old, and she had choked on a piece of steak at Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire, and every single person at the table was those who loved her most. It was her family, and they could do absolutely nothing about it. So later on in life, she had began looking into the cause, and she actually now is working with one of the Massachusetts senators, Senator Bruce Tarr, to pass a bill that makes it a graduation requirement, CPR education and training, that is. And it's just amazing to see what she's doing today, and that's one of the effects that came from her life being saved by a young nurse who had stepped in. But yeah, so most states now do require it, but there are still a few that don't.
Can I go back to my early fire service career as a young lieutenant who was in fire prevention, and we would spend days and days during fire prevention month in all of the schools teaching fire prevention. And if you said to most children that, you know, most people that are, you know, well, you know, even into their 40s, what would they do if their clothes were on fire? Immediately they would say, stop, drop, and roll. Because we continued to teach that for a number of years as kids grew up in the school system. But what we haven't been doing, and if you think about it, like, how many times, I can tell you probably on one hand, how many times I've been to someone who actually, their clothes were on fire, and, you know, they actually, you know, stopped, dropped, and rolled. They weren't in a, say, let's say they weren't in a house fire, but they were, you know, something else caught their clothes on fire. And I've been a firefighter for over 40 years. But I can't even tell you how many times, well north of 1,000, where I went to a call where someone wasn't breathing and didn't have a pulse. So are we focusing our attention on what really matters? Now, I'm not saying that fire prevention and teaching, you know, young children about fire prevention isn't important, because it is. But could we couple that with CPR training too, as well as they get older and they can physically perform it, and then they could remember that for the rest of their life? So I think that those things are distinctly important together, and there has to be a way that we bring that education piece.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that stop, drop, and roll, I have that one planted in my head as well. And I'm well beyond the 40 years, so it's been around a long time.
Right.
So now, what would do you feel that ordinary people can do to prepare before an emergency happens, other than maybe getting that training?
I think the first thing they need to do is see themselves as the person that will help. Like from a psychological standpoint, be the one who others would look to, be the helper. Carol, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's great. Like I had mentioned before, the things that can prepare you to actually act in these scenarios are the fact that you need education, training, and we say in the book the willingness to act, but really it's that push where you can bypass the bystander effect and your brain really telling you that you shouldn't be the one to step up and you need to say, I am the one that steps up.
And I think that's a decision that comes long before the emergency.
Absolutely.
That you have to see yourself as that person. And yeah, we actually created a video on that too.
Yeah, and quite honestly, your book is going to go a long way with helping people, you know, recognize the potential impact of their actions, you know, rather than just being standing by and not becoming involved.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So now, what would you say about preparedness versus perfection? You know, because some people may say, you know, I may be somewhat prepared to act, but I really don't feel that I'm going to come off perfectly in doing CPR, for example.
We had been talking about this actually yesterday, and it's one sentence that I have to respond to this. It's the fact that bad CPR is better than no CPR.
Okay.
You can still save a life with bad CPR. You can't save a life with no CPR.
Yeah. Well, that's true. You know, but and you know, I think that people once they recognize the fact that, you know, there's like no legal ramification, there are a lot of positive possibilities and outcomes that could happen and impact and ripples that could happen as a result, I think people are going to be, you know, less inclined to just be a bystander and more inclined to become a participant.
That's what we hope.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So now, what would you, let's say, you know, you mentioned a few of the stories. You know, Brad, you mentioned Frank and John, and then Kira, you mentioned your grandfather. Can you, each of you, relate maybe one story in particular that really made a significant impact on you? And we'll start with Kira.
Yes, I had mentioned Madeline before, and I think that story has the most impact on me because Madeline's life was saved when she was 8 years old, and then she went on to create a club, an American Red Cross club in, or chapter in her high school, and she had gone out into the restaurants in her area and taught the wait staff and the chefs and everybody who would be working in said restaurants how to perform the Heimlich maneuver and how to do CPR to make sure that what had happened to her would not happen to anybody else in her community. And then she had gone on to work with Senator Bruce Tarr. And I think she says in her chapter that she went and she actually propositioned a bunch of middle-aged professionals. She had spoken to one of the major restaurant groups in her area and one of the major banks in her area and had received funding. And she has really been since such a young age paving the path. And I can relate to that in so many areas in the sense that I was a young girl who had been advocating for different things. And it's hard just as a woman, but not only as a young woman to be able to be taken seriously. And I'm 23 years old. We started when I was 22. I began working in the emergency room at 20 years old. And so I, too, have also been a young woman trying to pave the path so that others' lives will be saved. And I think she's doing an incredible job. We just got word that she's going to be attending Harvard in the fall, and She is just so amazing, and I definitely look up to her as somebody who's doing great things in this world.
Yeah, that is just so wonderful that, you know, someone took that experience at a young age and just, you know, became active in pursuit of making sure that others have the same kind of life, quality of life afterwards that she has.
Yes, she's definitely going to go far in life, and I yeah. can't wait to see it.
That's great. And Brad, how about you? Any one story in particular that, you know, maybe has a little bit more impact on you, on your life or your perspective?
Yeah, I certainly do think, I mean, there's a number of great stories in there. And I actually have my own story in there, and I'll let the readers read it in the book. But I think my dad's story is probably one of the most impactful for me. And more so, not just it was for the time that we got, and it is a great story and a tearjerker for the audience. I'm gonna tell them right now, and it's not just because it's my dad, but it gave me a different perspective on not only saved, you know, someone who was saved, but also loss, because I lost my mom suddenly. And I didn't get a second chance. I didn't get to talk to her after. I didn't get to, you know, leave nothing on the table, meaning that I didn't get an opportunity to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And with my dad, we left nothing on the table. I mean, he was resuscitated neurologically, fully neurologically intact. And it also brought me back to our school, because the training that we do here at our EMS school, and we're one of the largest EMS schools in the country, And our mission here every single day is pure. And I say it on every email that I send. And you know, NMETC exists. You know, NMETC educates and trains EMTs and paramedics so that future lives may be saved. And one of our former graduates was at my dad's resuscitation.
Wow.
So when I think about full circle and I think about the impact that we have, our school has, that all of us have on individuals' lives. So when we sat and interviewed all of the folks that either are living or their families, and we, as I say in the book, we sat in the rawness of their emotion as we interviewed these folks, and we have it all on video, and we'll release that in the future. But I think that perspective of seeing both sides of that saved effect really gave me a different outlook on not only on life, but about our mission and what we do.
Yeah. You know, we often don't see that. You know, a lot of times the focus is, you know, just on the individual. And everyone's lives are intertwined with, you know, family, friends, community. And just by saving a particular life, you're really impacting to the positive all of the people whose lives that person touches.
Absolutely. That's really the main theme of our book.
Yeah, wonderful. So, well, I'll ask each of you, what do you hope that the readers are going to take away from reading your book? Kira?
For me, I think that readers take away the fact that these stories could be your loved ones. They could be you. And you want that positive outcome, and you want the saved effect to occur to you, so be it ever happened. And you would want the same for your loved ones. So I think that what we want everybody to take most is the raw emotions of these stories, and we hope that they're moved by it and they're moved to go learn CPR and be trained, but be ready and willing to act.
Okay. And I think there are two audiences for this book, Robert. The first audience, we hope that they're inspired by these stories, and that if they don't have the training, they'll go and get the training in CPR and then be willing to step forward. The second folks that we wrote this book for were folks like Kira and I, the first responders and the people that work in the hospital, because we don't generally get to see what happens after. And it was so cathartic to really hear their stories and see that long arc of time of these individuals, because we know that the mission that we have dedicated our life to matters.
Yeah. You know, and when you talked about, you know, you don't, as emergency responders, you don't often see, you know, after you drop, you know, an individual off to the hospital, you don't see what happens. And when you first mentioned that during the beginning of the interview, my mind just flashed to a lot of the television shows that we see, you know, the medical and the police shows, and, you know, whenever there are EMTs and individuals saved, the show ends right there, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, what happened? And then on occasion, you know, some of the storylines will have, you know, an EMT individual who does, you know, kind of in fact look into what happened afterwards. And it's interesting because a lot of times the storyline will be like, you know, that's beyond their scope. You know, it's something that they shouldn't be doing. But in fact, it seems like that following up on that would just increase the pride in one's job.
Absolutely. And I think in your older audience, they'll see this. And just like the Paul Harvey of the Saved effect, now for the rest of the story, right?
Right. Exactly.
Your audience doesn't understand that.
I was going to say, you have to be of a certain age to know that. But I do know exactly what you're talking about. So, and again, your book is to be released on August 18th. And I mentioned earlier that, you know, if people pre-order, they can take part in getting over $300 worth of bonuses. So, again, can you share with the listeners, you know, what those bonuses include?
Sure. First, we'll send you a digital copy of the book. We'll send you an audio book. We'll also send you a book of quotes, because there's some really interesting quotes in our book, so we actually developed a book of quotes. And then we'll also send you the link to our free hands-only CPR class that we've developed online in a video.
That's great. All very wonderful additions, and people really should take advantage of that. Well, Brad and Kira, it has been a true joy speaking with you, and I want to thank you for your time and your insight.
Thank you for your time. It's been so wonderful today, and thank you for giving us the platform to be able to share and boast our message.
Yes,
You're very welcome. Again, in closing, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. And again, my special guests have been Brad Newberry and Kira Newberry, and their book is The Saved Effect, True Stories of Lives Reclaimed by People Who Were Willing to Act. And I want you to remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch. Okay, Brad and Kira, that is it. I really thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, this was so wonderful.
Great. You're welcome. And then, again, once those links are up on the various platforms, I'll go ahead and send them to Johanna, and she can share them with you.
Great.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day and a safe 4th of July.
Yes, you as well.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye-bye.